I want to break away from sermonizing, and I want to just talk to you about a couple of things. There are some marvelous things going on in our church, and I don't know that everybody knows about these things, and so I want to share them with you, but briefly. I've been so encouraged in the last few months or weeks especially because of your encouragement. Now, you've encouraged me, and I'm so grateful to you. It's exciting to be encouraged. I'm grateful for cards, letters, and comments. Grateful that you've been so encouraging. I didn't know that the other day I must have looked long-faced. And as I was going about whatever it was I was doing, someone saw that long face or sensed or felt they sensed a burden. And so they wrote me a letter. It was a beautiful letter. Don't give up on us yet, they concluded. Well, I'm not about to do that, I don't think. Not just yet. But it's so nice to be encouraged, and I hope you're encouraged. You teenagers, I think back to my teenage days, it's 100 years ago it seems, but I used to be so discouraged. I used to find my parents discouraged me. I would have little lectures from parents who really didn't understand what in the world I was doing, and I couldn't understand how they thought they understood me at all. I found that very difficult to deal with. And my dad would choose moments, choice moments, to tell me, "You're a cad." And that had nothing to do with a Cadillac. He wasn't saying I was splendid. He was saying I was a dirty dog, like a Wiener Schnitzel. He was saying I wasn't too encouraging. I used to feel pretty wretched when he'd say things like that. And I'd come home, and, you know, I hated school. I think I've mentioned this before. I really didn't care for teachers. Teachers were not my favorite people. And it was such a nuisance that I ever have to go to school, especially if the sun shone. I was one of those boys that would sit and gaze out of the window and count how many clouds effortlessly went through the sky, and there I was, riveted to a desk, stuffed in a hot atmosphere under glass. Teacher's favorite dish, child under glass. Two walls of one of the classrooms I was in was solid glass until it got blown away, which was an exciting day that I won't repeat here. It was just one of those experiments. We had made solid fuel and rammed it into a gallon can. And we thought we had really made it because this fellow, this friend of mine and myself, we were great experimenters. And we knew that this solid fuel would burn and it would go tremendously well. And we lit the wick and nothing happened. We went back, we put a new wick in, and we lit the wick, and it fizzled, and it went out. And so we decided that we would get this thing in orbit. And we placed it over a Bunsen burner on a tripod. And it was tremendous. It ignited. And that gallon can, it was a peach can that we got. My friend's sister went out with a GI. And he gave her a gallon can of peaches, and it was a peach can. And that gallon can, when the flame was shooting out, burning the top of the laboratory table thing, and we were a little frightened at that, but we were fascinated. And it lifted off, and it went up. And we were fascinated. And then it went bang, and all these windows broke, and the air raid siren sounded, and we ran. And the newspaper announced there was unidentified bomb. And we didn't tell them for years exactly what happened. But that was my last experiment. I didn't like teachers. School bothered me. My dad didn't understand when I tried to tell him that night that we were responsible to replace some, in dollars, I suppose, several thousand dollars worth of window. He just didn't understand and called me a lot of names that I didn't need to hear. Sort of thoughtless and irresponsible, wretched. Why had God blessed him with me? I wasn't impressed with my dad's vocabulary at all. I really didn't understand him. He discouraged me. Now, I worked hard just to get the equivalent of a D. I worked very hard. And he'd always say to me, you can do better. And one day I got in with the equivalent of an A. And he said, you can do better. I said, tell the teacher that, Dad. Don't answer me back. Bang. Oh, I won't say it again, Dad. He didn't seem to understand. I used to get very discouraged. I'd come home. Can you help me with my homework? Yes, certainly. What is it? Well, it's math. Oh, yes. Well, this is how you work that out. That's very simple. There's the answer. Dad, the teacher doesn't work it out that way. I don't care what the teacher does. They don't understand anything. This is how you work it out. And I'd go to school and I'd say, teacher, my dad said you don't know anything, but there's the answer. How about that? They didn't understand that either. So I was discouraged at school. I was discouraged at home. Parents couldn't help me. I was trying to learn Latin. Megisar, megisam, megisaurus, megisis. I used to like bello for war. Bello, bellam, belloris, bellis. And when you get to belly, that was a rude word in England, so we'd say belly. And teacher would get all excited and upset with us. One of the fellows stopped saying belly, he'd say navel. And that didn't... He got discouraged over that. They had a cane to discourage him. And it was very discouraging. Discouragements come. I don't know how you teenagers cope. This is a discouraging time. I had a lovely phone call today. A voice on the other end said, hello, Grandpa, California. This is Adam James Umpleby. I've got a song to sing to you. This is the day the Lord hath made, so make a great splash. I said, what did you say? He said, this is the day the Lord hath made, so make a great splash. I said, do you know any more songs? He said, no, I made that one up. Isn't that good? I wouldn't have dared to have said, isn't that good? To my parents, they would have said, no, a child can't be that way. That's miserable. I used to get so discouraged. Do you get discouraged? I encouraged my grandson to tell me more. So he did. Then I had to try to get him off the telephone. He went on, he told me all the wrong things his mother was doing, all the wrong things his father was doing, all his wrong things his brother was doing, all the wrong things the preacher was doing. He told me lots of things. I said, how's the snow? He said, oh, well, I just came in. And then he wanted to know, do you make cocoa, Granddad? I said, no. He said, well, I do. And then he told me how to make cocoa. You know, I'm not at all interested in how you make cocoa, but I didn't want to discourage the boy, so I said, oh, really? How do you do that? Well, he said, You get this stuff in a packet and you plop it in a cup, and then you put water in it, and then you put it in the microwave and you punch 100. And then when it whistles, you open the microwave, take it out, stir it up and drink it. I said, is it that easy? He said, yes, listen, it's whistling. I've got to go now. I'm going to drink my cocoa. It was a very strange conversation. It's easy to get discouraged. I heard a boy about 12 years old say, I wish I'd never been born. You know, that's a terrible piece of discouragement, isn't it? Old Nehemiah had a vision of God. God gave him this supervision. And he said, I want you to go and do something for me. I want you to rebuild Jerusalem, put it all together again so that I am glorified and no longer am I ashamed. No longer am I ashamed. One of the reasons we clip our lawns and clip our hedges and paint and try to keep things neat and tidy, because it is a shame to God if we don't keep things neat and tidy. And Nehemiah went to do just this job, and when he got to Jerusalem and he found the walls tumbled down and the houses tumbled down and people in debt, so far in debt that he went to the people that had loaned the money and he said, what you're doing is wrong. You're charging them too much money for their money. And you've got to stop doing this. These people are discouraged. Now we've got to build walls and we've got to build gates and we've got to build doors and we've got to make this place strong. We've got to take the shame away from God. You know, it wasn't long before he just started the job clearing the ground and getting the masonry together and the wood together. And along comes old Sambalat and he says, what do you think you're doing? Well, he said, God has given me a commission and the king has given me permission. and I've started to rebuild this wall of Jerusalem and to build new gates and doors. And old Sanballat said, you got all the permission you need? You can't do that. They won't let you. In other words, you didn't have a committee. You didn't get your committee together and have a committee meeting. How can you do that? How dare you take so much upon yourself? Tobalat did the same thing. And between the two of them, Sanballat and Tobalat, they kept on talking and talking, and they kept on ridiculing and ridiculing. The curious thing was, even though they were very discouraging, this man, Nehemiah, got the job done. Israel were really ticked off. They were discouraged. For 40 years, they'd gone round and round in circles in the wilderness, and they wanted out, and Moses was about to die, and they sent off some people to spy out the land. And these people came back. Most of them said, oh, you can't go there. There are giants. Look at the size of the grapes. The grapes are enormous. Everything is very big. They must have gone to Alaska. Massive. And they described the people, and everything was bigger than life. Oh, the people of Israel were so discouraged. Oh, they trembled. Now listen, this is what happens when you get discouraged. And do you know that being discouraged is sinful? This is what happens when you get discouraged. Whether you're old or young, it makes no odds when you get discouraged. It's very discouraging to stand in a doctor's office and be told, well, now you have a disease. Your heart goes boomly, boomly, boom. And your eyes sort of go out of focus. And you suddenly go hot and cold. And you think, me? I've always been fit. What's God doing? He's not fair. And all sorts of things just tumble through your mind. It can be very discouraging. It's discouraging. A friend of mine, oh, he was such a fellow. He is such a fellow, I should say. About 12 years old, he got polio. And he spent months, and I believe the months turned into years, in an iron lung. Right at the 12-year-old, you know, you teach us, well, that's an important part. He has to learn things. And he laid on his back. And then they rolled him over and laid him on his tummy. He looked at people through mirrors. His papa decided that was enough. He couldn't stick watching this kid anymore, so he left mummy and boy. Mama didn't have much money. And by the time he was 14, and he'd just missed 2 years of schooling, he decided that he was going to learn. And they say that he could have graduated by the time he was 17, but he was still going. And that young man put himself through college, laying on his back. And that young man learned how to work leather, and he made belts, and he made holsters, and he made leather things, and he made shaps for cowboys, and he made all sorts of things out of leather, laying on his back. I want to share this with you because he's one of my champions. This fellow that had everything to be discouraged about now decided that he was about 18 and it was time for him to learn about electronics. And he taught himself from books. There was nobody that would visit him and teach him. And then he was determined that he'd walk again. And his determination took him from that iron lung to walking in a space of 3 or 4 years. And it took him from walking to running in an ungainly style, but he ran. And he came to our town discouraged and despondent. And he opened up a little store to fix TVs. I hunted with him this last year. Wherever I could go, he could most certainly go. Where anybody went in their travels up the mountains, no matter how steep or how deep, he went. He shot his elk. You know, I remember when he fooled around with guns and hardly knew which end to poke in the right direction. He goes archery hunting, which is very demanding. And he gets his elk, his deer. And today he has a very thriving business. God has blessed him. But he was so discouraged. But he refused to be discouraged. And these people in Israel, they said, "Oh my, listen to the reports. There are giants. There are all these massive problems. We can't possibly go there." But then came in a couple of fellows, and they said, "Hey, you know, we saw all these giants. We saw all these great big people and all these massive things. But you know what? God's on our side. Let's go." And they led the children into a promised land. Let's go, family. Don't be a discourager. There's a story. It's heartbreaking and pitiful. But there was a lot of poverty in the British Isles in the 20s. And during that time, children were wont to play in the streets, very often without shoes. And most of the time without anything warm. I've seen children playing on the slag heaps in the various coal mining towns, where the boys would wear a pair of breeches, and usually their backs were torn out of the breeches and they had nothing underneath. They had a shirt on, usually short-sleeved and torn, and nothing on their feet. It would be raining, and they'd be playing sand castles only in coal trailings. I've seen the girls, they would just wear a dress, nothing on their feet. And this story is in Glasgow. It happened. A lady saw the children in the street playing. At the end of the street stood the constable, the policeman, and he watched the children playing. And he noticed this lady coming down the street who had gathered her apron. Remember that you older ladies, how you used to wear aprons. She had gathered her apron in front of her and was going along the street picking things up and putting them in her apron. By the time she got to the end of the street where the constable stood looking rather fiercely down his nose, he felt it was his duty to find out what this woman, he felt, maybe was stealing. What could be stolen from a street, I really don't know. But the children were playing, and they were playing without shoes on, and there were various bars or pubs, as we would call them, in the street. And when she got to the policeman, he looked down at her, and his Scots accent, he asked her, "What are you collecting? Show me what you've got." And she didn't want to. He said, "Woman, I must know. What have you got in your apron?" And she opened her apron, and it was filled with pieces of glass. "What are you picking glass up for?" "Well, the children are in their bare feet." He was a discourager. Sometimes we don't know why people are doing or saying or thinking and acting, and we don't find out, and we are so abrupt and we are so rude in trying to discover that instead of encouraging, we discourage and we pour water on what was a fire. Let's beware of the discouragers, for they are sinful people. Let's beware of discouragement. It is a sin. Let's beware of being discouraged, which means we've fallen into that sin. Listen to the scriptures. If God be for us, who can be against us? Who is it if God is for us? Be encouraged by God. Don't let anybody that comes against you discourage you. Be encouraged by God. I'm always referring to David and his experience at Ziklag. What an experience it was. He had taken his men. They had been on this rampage. They'd done what they wanted to do in their profession, which was protection of the smallholder, the small ranches and farms. They had done their job. They had collected themselves, come back to find that all their women and all their children had been taken prisoner and all their belongings were gone. And they were so discouraged. So discouraged were the men that they took up stones and were going to stone David. There was nowhere David could go. You know what he did? This is what the Bible says. David encouraged himself in the Lord. He went to the Lord and laid his plan and laid his agony and laid all his pain in front of God. Now he said, Lord, in effect, encourage me. Encourage me. Hey, do you get discouraged? Sure you do. Remember, it's sinful to be discouraged, and deal with it. The children of Israel started with discouragement. You know what that led to? It's important that you know. It led to them murmuring. You know what that means? Whispering. Telling stories, gathering information and passing it on, and it wasn't true. They murmured against the leadership. And as they murmured against the leadership, you know what happened? They became critical of the leadership. Then you know what happened? God dealt with them. And they walked for 40 years in a wilderness. If we've walked, let's enter now our promised land. If we've gone round and round in circles because God has allowed us to be confused, let's now be encouraged in the Lord. Let's be just as we are. Not any fancy business, nothing added to us, just as we are without a single plea, but that His blood was shed for you and me. Let's come to that place where we can understand love. Now, I don't want to get too involved in talking about love because I know I'll be misunderstood. But knowledge is not love. It never was. Knowledge is a self-aggrandizement that puffs us up and makes us rather good. I know something about you. That gives me knowledge. That is not my love. Love always protects. Love always helps. Love is never critical. Love is of God. So you can know a lot about God, a lot about the Lord Jesus, but not love. So I'm going to invite you to sing with me the hymn 21. I want you to sing it well. It's called Love Divine. All loves excel in joy of heaven. To earth come down. Fix in us thy humble dwelling. All thy faithful mercies crown.